Hello and welcome to the IRPP's Interview with the Author series. My name is Shirley Cardenas, and today we are joined by my guest, Professor Philip Kelly. He is a professor of geography at York University and director of the York Center for Asian Research. His new study is entitled Understanding Intergenerational Social Mobility, Filipino Youth in Canada. Welcome, Professor.
Thank you.
Now, we know that Canadian research has found there's considerable upward mobility among the children of immigrants. But you say Filipino youth are not always part of that success story. Can you explain?
Yes, we know that children in Canada are generally more highly educated than their parents, and that the children of immigrants tend to be even more highly educated than their parents. In the case of Filipino youth, what we've seen is a pattern that we describe as a double anomaly, in the sense that Filipino first-generation immigrants, are very highly educated compared with other immigrant groups, with very high levels of degree graduation. The Filipino youth often graduate from university at lower rates than their parents. And when we compare Filipino youth with youth in other immigrant communities, we find that they are graduating from university at lower rates than those peer groups. So it's a double anomaly in the sense that they are graduating from university at lower rates than their parents and than their immigrant peer groups. So we find that there is an anomaly amongst Filipino youth, and particularly amongst Filipino male youth, amongst young Filipino-Canadian men, who are graduating from university at the lowest rate of any visible minority.
So your study looks at some of the factors that lead to Filipino youth having poorer outcomes than we might expect. Can you tell us about this?
Yes, we actually look at the factors in three categories. We first of all look at family resources of time and money. And what that relates to really is the process of deprofessionalization that Filipino immigrant parents frequently go through on arrival in Canada. So people arrive, as I've said, with anomalously high levels of education, but often find they can't have their professional credentials and experience recognized in the Canadian labor market, and so work in precarious, marginalized, low-paid, low-status jobs in the service sector quite often. What that means is that families don't have the resources for post-secondary education and also don't often have the time for parents to spend with their children. So parents are working in shift work. They're often working multiple jobs in order to make ends meet. And so they don't on a daily basis have time to oversee their children in the way that they would want to. And that can often lead to problems in a child's academic trajectory. The other set of factors we talk about are the networks and information flows that are so important in determining the labor market outcomes and the labor market entry points for young people. So in the Filipino community, where the first generation of parents are so concentrated in healthcare, in hospitality and accommodation, for women and for men, for heavy over-concentration in the manufacturing sector, we find that those tend to form the networks that young people have and the information that they have into the labor market. And so that partly shapes their aspirations and what they have information about in order to pursue both courses and to get information about job opportunities. The third set of factors that we identify relate to what we call role models and aspirations, and that's really a less tangible set of factors that speak to the ways in which Filipino identity is constructed and construed in Canada, and the association of Filipino identity with certain kinds of work. So this in part gets internalized by some youth as a sort of natural association between their Filipino identity and certain types of often low-status work. And it also relates to the absence of role models in the community because there's been this deprofessionalization of parents, and so there isn't the degree of participation at high levels in professions, in academia, in civic life, in business leadership positions. And so Filipino youth don't necessarily have the role models to guide them and to inspire them in terms of aiming high in the labor market. So we saw a set of factors coming out of our interviews related to those issues as well.
So you say we need to re-examine immigration channels that cause family separation over long periods, in particular the live-in caregiver program. Can you explain?
On a larger scale, the Filipino immigrant community has a distinctive pattern of immigration, and about a quarter of Filipino immigrants arrive through the live-in caregiver program, which is a federal immigration program that requires participants to live with their employer doing care work for at least 2 years. So that causes family separation and also removes those women from whatever professional past they had in the Philippines. And that means that they again don't have the resources because of the types of jobs that they're being integrated into once they immigrate. And they often don't have the time because of the types of jobs that are that they're drawn into.
In your study, you propose a number of recommendations. Can you tell us about them?
Yes, the one of the major issues that we felt needed to come across in the study was the fact that deprofessionalization and the failure of Canadian labor markets to recognize and reward the professional experience and education of first-generation immigrants has to be seen as something more than just a settlement issue. It has to be seen as something that can have echoes and resonances and implications across generations. A second set of policy recommendations concerns family separation, and this particularly speaks to the conditions attached to the live-in caregiver program. So one solution would be permanent residency on arrival so that caregivers can bring their families with them. Another would be to really focus on the very rapid processing of caregiver permanent residency applications so that family members can be reunited as quickly as possible. And those disruptions to a young person's childhood are not as harmful in terms of educational outcomes as they seem to be at the moment. Another issue would be access to education. It's really important that post-secondary education is financially accessible, even for those who are on relatively low family incomes. So looking at issues of student loans and student fees and tuition fees is really important. And another thing we pointed to was the need for specific programs that address the youth, the needs of male youth. We see a particularly poor outcomes in terms of university graduation for Filipino male youth, and programs that address male achievement in the educational system are really important as well. And then finally, some of the things we pointed to related to the place of Filipino identity in Canadian society and the lack of a positive affirmation of that identity in the educational system in particular. So beyond the traditional ways in which diverse identities get acknowledged through multicultural events and Asian Heritage Month and so forth, we recommended that curricula in schools in particular really reflect the identity of the and the background of the students in the classroom, so that Filipino curricula materials that relate to Philippine society, history, ecologies, and so forth be integrated into elementary and high school curricula, so that there's a positive affirmation of the Philippines as somewhere to be proud of and somewhere to identify with. And that's a really important part in reinforcing the self-esteem and the aspirations of Filipino-Canadian youth in Canadian society.
Well, thank you very much for your time today, Professor Kelly. Philip Kelly is the author of Understanding Intergenerational Social Mobility, Filipino Youth in Canada. You can download this paper free of charge from our website at irpp.org.